Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Welcome to Horror Bites on SaveBrain, the show where we highlight short indie horror games and the people who make them. I see a bad moon rising, and he is a man about town. How goes it, Jay?
It's going well. Excited to dive into two different flavors of horror this week, but I think they both have their strengths, along with maybe a path for how they could be expanded into bigger experiences down the road.
Absolutely. This week, we've got an abandoned town to explore and a camping trip where we'll encounter some kind of lupine hound. These games can be found on Itch.io, and if you play them and enjoy them, please help the developers out by supporting their present and future works in any way you can. As ever, links for both games will be included in the show notes. So, Jay, first we are visiting the lesser seen pages of the travel guide and heading to a city that definitely doesn't have a restaurant guide, I'd imagine.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. So this was Passerby from developer Neven Hedinger, which is a first-person horror experience about a lone traveler named Nathan, who's exploring a city that lies abandoned after some type of post-apocalyptic event. The streets are filled with monsters at night, and Nathan must take refuge and forage within the city. But then a knock at the door one night kind of reminds Nate that there are more things to fear out there than the undead, it seems. So this was one of my favorite types of horror bites in that it presents a very believable and very atmospheric world in a very short period of time. This is basically, a 15-minute game, but at the same time, you can soak in that atmosphere. So it might last a little bit longer, just if you want to explore the sort of boundaries of the city itself. So it's funny that I played this game this week, considering I've been rewatching their Chernobyl series on HBO. Yeah. And, there were a lot of parallels, I think, and coming off of, talking about Stalker last week, because there's plenty of high-rise abandoned buildings that you're going to be walking past and whatnot, on top of the fact that, you have some bombed-out cars, you've got these boarded-up buildings, but it's more than that, because when you're walking through the different rows of apartment blocks, there's this sort of mist that might be some residual effects from whatever catastrophic event occurred, whether that be like a nuclear blast or something along those lines, but also, just little details that make this at least feel like a lived in place. And, when you're walking through this sort of like high overgrown grass, the grass starts to sway with the wind and you hear like the wisps and whatnot, to the degree that when you're walking through the streets during the day and there's no monsters you have to avoid, it still kind of like keeps you on edge, this idea that it's a post-apocalyptic setting, but there are still, survivors out there along with the undead. And that just made for an experience that, while the objectives are pretty straightforward, it's like find the keys, scavenge for items and whatnot. There's that great sense of like, you just keep wanting to turn around, look over your shoulder periodically, just to make sure, nothing's stalking you and whatnot. Before I get to the back half of the experience, which deals a little bit more with the narrative, how did you find this? Did you find this as engrossing as I did?
Yeah, you're right about that atmosphere. It's just something else. There's something about the dilapidated buildings of it all, that low-lying mist, as you said, and I couldn't quite picture what it was, but it really did just tap into something about the sort of gloominess of, the old sort of style retro graphics, I'd imagine, is probably what it does. But it's not the obvious thing where I always think, oh yeah, because it reminds me of a PlayStation game. It's kind of more than that. I think actually what has helped with it is playing stuff like Half-Life 2 and Fallout recently, where there's a lot of this, a sort of similar aesthetic to certain places. But this is still very distinctly its own thing, and it's like a pocket little universe of what's going on, and you don't have all the details to it at first, but it just has such a wonderful atmosphere, and I think the darkness really sells it, when you get especially because the light stuff is like, it looks cool, those green skies are really like oppressive, but I think when night hits, it's just something definitely unsettling about the way it works. And I think especially the people you meet, you know, in this place, as limited as they are, do make for such an interesting company in terms of, like, you're not sure what your relationship is to them. You're not sure what kind of people they are in this sort of environment that you're, you know, to live here and to be here in any capacity. It seems a bit odd. So you have a mistrust of the area as it is, and that doesn't help. You know, it's quite reminiscent of like Ravenholm, I think. Which is because, you know, that's the thing I've been playing very recently, and on Half-Life 2. And yeah, especially in the sense of having the only people around them, the ones mad enough to be here, sort of thing. And I love that, like that, it has that sort of subtext of a history that even if you do get some of the information, you feel like there's so much more you could learn about this place. And there could be so much more detail. I know you said at the top of the show that, you know, these are games that you could see where they could be expanded upon. It's like, without even like making this bigger in terms of the game world itself, you could just add a few more areas to go and explore in it and really flesh it out into something quite deep and interesting. You know, not that it isn't already interesting, but it would just be, it's got so much potential there to just be like this world full of interesting, doomy, gloomy stuff. I'm glad to see someone else sort of doing that in the way that they're doing it. I think Hollow Body has a good element of that. Demo we played for that recently, but this is very much a distinct thing as well. Not totally sold on the ending, but then
yeah,
I think we had that discussion so many times now, you know, about the endings and on short games. It's like you're not getting the build up, which is again why it'd be brilliant to sort of have something more fleshed out and more stuff to go with it. And and I think this is a great, it's not even proof of concept, it's pretty feature complete in what it is. I think it does enough to show that it is a game worth playing in terms of atmosphere, in terms of setting, and shows how, you know, something we don't seem to learn in the bigger spaces is that keeping things compact can still be interesting and full of things to explore, even on this scale, you know. And that's when they talk about this week about the idea of like immersive sims might have to go the way of like open worlds. It's like, had we not just seen what happened with Redfall, sort of thing, you know, it's that went. It's like, no, it's like you can build a small world and make it interesting. We were only talking about the Dishonored game recently, and you know, relatively speaking, they are small worlds. That give you such a rich history and atmosphere, even if the storytelling isn't at the same level, the game world itself tells you a story. And I think that this has that in terms of the design of it. You know, I look at that and it's just such an interesting vista of buildings that it's so ordinary and simple, but it works so well. I think the sort of graphical style really helps that out.
Yeah, it feels like someone that actually kind of used references of what actual cities look like to craft the city, because, you know, sometimes when you have post-apocalyptic or something along those lines, sometimes some people have the inclination to be like, well, we got to litter the streets with bodies and we have to have these buildings that, you know, are so destroyed to the point that, like, I don't even know if this really resembles an actual building anymore type of thing. And with this, it was nice to just see everything be overgrown, but to still have, you know, a semblance of architecture that makes sense and the layout of it. And, you know, in terms of like fleshing this experience out more, I wouldn't necessarily want it to be even a bigger of an experience, but just more options, I suppose, in exploring what's there. Because there's a police station, there's a gas station, and there's another little building, but you don't really explore them to the degree that you do the inevitable shelter that you find. And it was more just like, oh, I wish that what was already here was fleshed out a little bit more, rather than like, let's make this world even larger than it already is.
Yes.
And I guess in regards to that ending, you know, it was the type of thing where, and we've talked plenty of times about how endings and those types of finales are hard to land. It's the type of thing where I don't necessarily think it doesn't work because of what is there. I think it's more of a pacing thing, again, because of the size of the experience. Absolutely. So giving it a little bit more breathing room, would probably make that ending land even better because of the fact that the world itself supports that type of ending. And we're being vague on purpose here because it's a nasty little surprise at the end, narratively speaking. It's just that if there was a little bit more breathing room, it would play out in a way that would probably land better rather than sort of rushing to the finish line, if you will. But again, that's the nature of those bite-sized experiences. You don't have all the time in the world to tell your stories, but I would say that this one does a good job of, you know, doing a lot with maybe something that some people might view as being like, hey, you know, it's another run-of-the-mill post-apocalyptic city, but it was one that I wanted to, you know, return to as soon as it was over.
Yeah. And even with that ending, it's like tonally it's correct for what it is as well. So, and there's nothing wrong with it per se. It's just like as it hits it, having that run up that it needs, which is totally fine. As we said, that's, you know, as you just said, pretty much a given of this sort of format. But, hey, never mind. The rest of it is more than enough to show what the potential is there, without a shadow of a doubt. We're going to climb into our sleeping bags, but when we wake up, the moon will be full and we will be back from a quick break. Welcome back to Horror Bites. Johnny Games made the hit Itch.io game Slide in the Woods, but now he's back with something a bit more typically deadly in the woods in the demo for Fear the Moon. In this game, a group of friends go on a camping trip together in an Ohio forest, but unwittingly end up in the territory of a wolfman. Can they survive the night and escape a fate worse than kibble? Well, that's up to you. The demo is about 25 minutes long and is chapter 1 of 3 for the full game, which Johnny says is coming very soon. Yes, which I do hope so. I will say that now. So yeah, this is a first-person horror. Has like some text-based sort of cutscenes, I suppose, in terms of like conversation choices, things like that. Fairly simple in terms of setup. Like, on the surface, you could go, yeah, I've seen this kind of horror game a few times. But first things first, I think it looks pretty good for what it is as well. You know, I think it's that sort of level we've been talking about where it's, I think more games are starting to look more like the PS2 era than the PSX era. And I think we're getting that replication down on point. And obviously it has the great hook of like, yeah, well, the enemy here is a werewolf. So it's like, oh, well, that's cool. And, you know, it's what caught my eye straight away. It was like, yes, werewolf survival horror. That sounds perfectly fine for me. So, yeah, and that's basically what you end up with. You end up with this, you know, jump scare heavy, I suppose. Not too bad, but enough of it that you certainly get a little weary at one point. But, yeah, you have these sections where you are really having to sort of, you're under the cosh and it's cinematically played out, I suppose, in terms of like who lives, who dies, whatever. But it's done with such a cool intensity. And I think to jump to the end of it, you know, there's a bit at the end of this chapter, you know, where you are effectively trying to escape that is like classic sort of, you know, oh, escape the monster while everyone else is suffering a horrible fate potentially. And then you think you've got away and, you know, it ends up being that kind of ending. And that was a good jump scare at the end of that one, I must say.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this because it's already sort of put forth as being part one of a three-part chapter thing, it does feel very complete, you know, in what it is. So I think, like, visually, as I said, it's very impressive. I think on a technical level, I think it's really well done. I think just the general lighting as well, I think, is quite impressive as well. I mean, you look at the moon is just like always having to be like a character in this game because, you know, it's a wolfman story and like that. And yeah, the way it actually illuminates the sky and just it's so big and present in the story, I think is, you know, a really smart bit of storytelling for the start. But yeah, I mean, for a short experience, again, we just had this conversation about, you know, sometimes that affects pacing. And I think with the amount of people sort of involved here, it does feel like, and, you know, given the fate of some of them, it does feel like we're trying to rush through this bit to get to the next bit. So, I mean, it probably will end up being fleshed out a bit when the full game comes to it. And, you know, there'll be bits that probably were held back here to properly connect it with the next chapters. Because otherwise it's would be an anthology or something, maybe, but maybe it is going to be that. But as it stands, it seems like it's a bit... well, there's a potential for obviously where the next chapter could go. But I hope they haven't kind of like wasted as many characters as I think they have to sort of get there. which, I mean, it might be cool in that sense. That would be good to have a very traditional sort of Resident Evil idea of like, oh, look, you're a big team of people. And by the end of like the first act, you're down to one or two and that's it. So that could work. It's just, it feels like we've only got a taste so far of what could be. But it would do a really good job at sort of building up this Wolfman as this formidable threat. And, you know, I think the sort of in-game scenes, with, you know, cinematic scenes that happen like that are key to selling that. How did you find this one?
Yeah, man, I was really impressed with this. I'm of two minds, I suppose, with sort of this notion that this could either be a prologue and we're not going to continue with this character, or my hope though is that in the second chapter this character will have actually like survived their encounter, just because, as you said, you know, there's so much buildup in establishing this character as like the protagonist and those interactions with, you know, their friends who, you know, naturally will meet an untimely demise. I would hope that it would be the type of thing where it's this explosive intro to the experience where it's like, yeah, the basis of, you know, any horror movie, bunch of kids in the woods, most of you get taken out, and then there's the one, you know, final girl that goes and, you know, combats that threat throughout. The story stuff to the side, you know, I was really impressed right from the jump with the direction of this game. It felt like the various points of view and the various settings and just establishing a world, sort of a tone, and then also, you know, these multiple relationships with all these characters was done in a way that was more concise than I think we see with some of these projects where, you know, they're juggling all of these sort of narrative or gameplay balls in the air and whatnot. And sometimes that can be jumbled, but this felt very clear cut in what it set out to do. And like I said, these multiple environments, but also going from an environment to then a cutscene, and the cutscene itself, again, is indicative of somebody that like, at least watches movies or understands, you know, how to direct a scene. Because that first scene when you're following the van through the woods to get to the campground, it's got this great overhead shot that's following it along these windy roads. And then you get this little chuckle from it, says the location is somewhere in Ohio, which is like the most ominous beginning to any game. but it was one of those things where to go from that, but then to have, you know, the wolf point of view periodically with him running through the woods and stalking people, back to a group of characters around a campfire, just having a conversation. It was really impressive in just, you know, how precise they were in capturing different vantage points, and everything felt like, you know, it had a purpose other than this is a cool shot kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Which sometimes, you know, direction could just be over stylized and then it's not actually conveying a great deal. But every time there was a cutscene, I felt as the player, I was being informed of something. I was also impressed with, you know, the character models. I think sometimes when we play these games, you know, the character models usually abide by that sort of PSX style that we're familiar with, where you've just got like this very distorted sort of like face wrap that usually gives us like a pretty good chuckle when it's a monster or something chasing you. But here, you know, the character models were both expressive and also featured, you know, had features, facial features that kind of allowed you to distinguish between the various characters. Pair that with some light dialogue options that I was a fan of the fact that, you know, based on what you pick in the sort of dialogue choice, a character will have a unique reaction to it. And I don't know how deep that system goes, obviously, but like the brief example would be one of the characters asks you how you find this camping trip. And I chose, it's not exactly what I was expecting. And the character then says back to me, yeah, I really wasn't expecting it to be like this either. Which is an indication that if you go in the affirmative for the other option, that they would have some type of dialogue that matches that. Little things like that, it makes it feel like including a dialogue option is actually necessary. Sometimes it's like you have a dialogue option and then you just get that stock response. And then it's kind of like, well, what's the point of giving me an option if whatever I say is just matched with, you know, the dialogue, regardless of whether or not it's in the affirmative or not.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, isn't it? Thinking about that is, thinking back about a few games we've covered in the past that do have like dialogue options, and you think, did they need them really? Right. It's like, but you know, I think a lot of the time, as we say, when you're talking at this scale, it's very much about like, well, we're trying to get to, you know, in much the way that, you know, an independent horror film might like need to sort of pad the runtime by 10 minutes and they'll find a way to do it here, there, and everywhere. Maybe to have a little conversation doesn't really fit the story. And I suppose having sort of dialogue trees is there to sort of shift it more towards the narrative sense and more of a, you know, build the story in one way or the other. But yeah, if it's necessary or not, it's, you know, a different story altogether. But yeah, you're right. Here, it does feel like well integrated at this point. You know, a shallow version of it, but I think it still works quite well for what it is.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, it's the type of thing where sometimes when they have that dialogue option, it almost just feels like a developer is including it. So they have, you know, another bullet point for the Steam page kind of like unique features, which if there's no follow through on it, obviously it's not a very unique feature. Just to see, you know, a very early indication of, oh, what I say actually garners a unique response is one of those things where it's like, I look forward to seeing how that can be expanded upon in the other chapters. And then in just rounding out, you know, I would say that the weather effects were really impressive, kind of like what you were saying about the moon in the section of it. You know, you're wandering around during the daytime and then at nighttime and you have this mist that just makes it feel like you're in a Hammer horror film almost when you're running to your group, which I was a huge fan of. There's an indication that there's going to be combat of some sort, which doesn't really play out in this, but you get a nice moment of, I'll say, an explosive entry of the wolf, which has some environmental destruction to it, which I liked. And I suppose the only two things that I would like to see in the next two chapters would be, you know, voiceover, I think would go a long way, but granted, again, that's dictated by the size and the amount of resources in terms of the production value. So that might just be a long shot. But at the same time, one aspect that I'd like to see improved slightly with the wolf's point of view would be to get rid of that sort of like night vision green for his viewpoint. I kind of wanted to see something a little bit more creative in that regard, because I don't know. That's an aesthetical nitpicking thing on my part. But I was just like, does the wolf really have like night vision goggles on? Like, why are we using this bright neon green? But you know, something maybe that like just impresses upon the fact that this is this, you know, feral creature that's hunting you and not, you know, a guy in a wolf suit with NVGs on.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a point at the beginning where you first see that viewpoint and it's the daytime. So it's kind of like, maybe is that a faux pas, or is that, you know, the red herring? Is it, what is it? We don't know. But yeah, given the attention to detail elsewhere, it seems at least they've left it open to debate, you know, which it could be. So yeah, not too bad. But yeah, well, that's probably it. We've had a fairly long talk here for Horror Bites for once on this one, which is always good, always a good sign. So we are wrapping things up now. And if you are a developer of an indie horror game, demo, concept, or game jam entry, we would love to hear from you. You can drop us a DM at SafeRoomPod on Twitter or SafeRoomPod@gmail.com for email if you'd like to be highlighted or interviewed on the show. Jay, let's get the tent packed up and not question why lampposts suddenly look like an appealing alternative to toilets. We'll be back from the wilderness with more Horror Bites next week.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM Podcast Network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.